Hey everybody, this is Sunny. You are listening on the free feed. Go sign up for the Patreon at subbeacon.com. This episode's about Cry Macho. Got an episode coming up on Friday for Patreon members about the new Sopranos prequel movie, The Many Saints of Newark. Very exciting. Going to tape that here in a few hours. So go listen to that. Go sign up for the Patreon, you know, keep the show sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. See you over there.
His name is Macho.
Like me, very strong rooster.
Whatever.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Guy wants to name his cock Macho. It's okay by me.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL.
Some big news in our household.
Oh, boy.
Flash has announced that he is running for student council.
Hey, wow.
And this... This has really got me thinking back to my days in student government.
Mm-hmm.
When I would like to share the story of JVL's brief foray into electoral politics. So we are at the V. Haddonfield Friends School, little hippie Quaker school that I went to for until sixth grade.
Haddonfield.
In Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Yes.
Isn't
that where Michael Myers lives?
Yes, that is. And so it was, you know, incredibly small school, like 100 kids total, grades 1 through 6, right? You know, my sixth grade class was 12 kids in it. And in sixth grade,
wow.
you're finally allowed to run for office in sixth grade. I was a real mocker, and I lined it up so that everybody would run unopposed. So I had sort of slut all the people who thought they wanted to make a drive for the brass ring. I said, no, let's just run as a full slate of candidates. So where, you know, I'll run for president. Chris Warshoven, my best friend, run for vice president. Then I forget, one of the other kids would run for treasurer. One of the other kids run for secretary. Everybody gets what they want. Nobody has to worry about losing a vote. And so we had all agreed, right? We had brokered the peace. And then on the date of the filing deadline, Chris, my best friend, comes in and says to me, yeah, you know, I decided I'm going to run for president too. So I was outraged, and I took this very seriously. So I rejiggered my slate. I had a full slate of people to run, again, the whole gamut. And this was a fool's errand for Chris, because my secret weapon was that my baby sister was a first grader. And the first grade kids are essentially like New York City to the entire school, if the entire school is New York State. You know, the lion's share of the students were all in first grade. So I had the first grade classrooms wired while Chris was an only child. Had no chance. Chris didn't even know anybody in the school below the, you know, below like fifth grade. So I ran a very, very serious campaign. It was, I don't know if you remember when I forget who the Virginia gubernatorial candidate was, whose entire campaign was no car tax. This is now 20 years ago. A gentleman ran for governor of Virginia.
That is a long time ago.
And the only issue he had, there was this hated personal property tax where you had to pay 20% of the value
exists.
Of your car. It does still exist, but it's much reduced. And it was 20% of the value of your car every single year you paid into.
It was a great disincentive to ever buy a new car.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, my single issue was Pretzel Day.
This is good.
Elect me president, and I will bring you a day in which you may purchase Philadelphia-style soft pretzels at the cafeteria.
For one day,
wait,
one
wait,
day,
question.
Pretzel, one day, like question. In the whole year, one day for, I think that's a good deal because it's like in the office.
Food question.
It's like in the office.
I have a food question. Are soft pretzels specifically a Philadelphia thing? Is that a...
Yes. No. 100%.
No.
That's not...
Like the cheesesteak.
Philly cheesesteak, yes.
You can get soft pretzels anywhere.
You get soft pretzels
They originated in Germany.
It's an Auntie Annie's thing. Yeah,
from Matthias will tell you they're from Germany.
So anyway, we hold the election, and I, if I could say so, I ran a dazzling campaign. I was, it was a very positive campaign, even all the official campaign paraphernalia, but behind the scenes, went hard neg, had to do a little hard, had to drive Chris's negatives up, and on election day, Teacher Gloria, because again, at hippie Quaker school, you call all of the teachers by their first names.
That is weird.
Nobody would call them by your last names. They didn't want to show that they were authority figures. So she calls all of the candidates into her office to give out the results. And she, you know, and so-and-so won secretary and so-and-so won treasurer and so-and-so won vice president. And at the presidential level, it was a very, very close race. But you know, our next president is Jonathan Last. And she dismissed us, and I went right up to her desk, and I demanded to know the vote total, because there was I was outraged that she would say that the race had been close, because I had done some whipping on the votes, and I could not find a single way that Chris could have crested 20 votes, and I was convinced that it was a blowout, and that how dare she impugn my mandate? I cannot believe that Chris is still my best friend.
How close was it?
She wouldn't tell me. Wouldn't tell me. Which I then was even more convinced meant that it was a blowout. And she was denying me my victory.
You don't think it was a plurality?
How many people were running in the... It was just you and Chris?
Just me and Chris. The point of all this is not to talk about my blowout win, but to talk about what a colossal asshole I was. And that Chris is a near saint for having put up with me for now 41 years of our lives together. Can you imagine putting up with me for 41 years, Vic?
No, one. one was enough, really.
I mean, it's already, you're already at like 25, right?
Yeah. Yeah, sort of.
You're 25.
That's it.
Yes.
That vaguely reminds me of the one and only time I ran for office in high school. My senior year, somebody put together a slate. JBL, not me, somebody else. The girl who had been the like freshman, sophomore, and junior class president was like getting ready to go in and be senior class president. She put together a whole slate of people. I ran unopposed for treasurer. I was the treasurer unopposed. Secretary was unopposed. Vice president may have had another token opposition. And then it was her for president. She was like a shoo-in. Everyone was going to vote for her because she'd been president all three of the previous years. And then somebody came to the school, new kid, came to the school. And I'm trying to think of the most appropriate way to put this. She was charismatic. And in a hope and change sort of way.
Yeah.
She was a great orator, not like that, JBL. She came in and she gave a blistering speech about, you know, how we're gonna change
new person, an outsider.
We're gonna have hope in the
enough
school.
Enough of the same. You know, you keep electing the same old student council presidents. Yeah, you get the same old results.
You do.
It's time for new. It's time to elect somebody who's not a career politician. Someone who hasn't been serving in student council for 3 years.
Yeah. So this girl won.
Was her name Tracy Flick?
The girl who set up the slate on which. So then I had to serve with this weird person who I had never met before, and I was like, "This is the worst. I'm going to be the laziest."
Her name was Elise,
and I was
Elise.
I was the laziest treasurer of all time. The only thing I really, my only real takeaway from this is, so in our high school, and I guess most high schools, like the class officers are responsible for doing like reunions in the future. So it's like the senior class is supposed to set up the reunions for the high school.
Oh yeah,
and I'll put it this way: we've had zero class reunions at Brook Point High School. Now, if we had elected Amanda, would have had a reunion on 5, 10, 15, 20 years, 30,
you elect this carpetbagger who has no loyalty to the school.
But this speechifying person came in and just blew everybody out of the water with her fancy talk and
hope
her
and change.
$10 words. And it was, and like I said, no class reunions ever since. You know, so that's my takeaway from politics.
You know what we say, Sonny?
If you vote for somebody new, it's gonna come back to bite you in the future.
Elections have consequences.
Elections have consequences, and the Brook Point class of 2000, the smoke-free class of 2000.
Victorina, how is it that you never did student council? Because I imagine was it just that it wasn't enough of a challenge for you?
I did student council. We didn't have any in grade school, so from 1 to 8. But I was a student rep at my sophomore year, and then junior year I was vice president, and then of the class, and then my plan was to run for student council president senior year.
Was it Steve? Did Steve win?
Well, what happened was we talked about it because we were best friends, and he wanted to be, and he was working his way up as well. He was student council vice president. I was the junior class vice president. Two different things, mm-hmm. right?
Because it's like levels. Being the governor versus the
senator. Versus the state. That's exactly right. And
although is which in this case?
The junior. What I was more like that's like the state assembly. You know what I mean? But the versus sort of on the national level. But running for student council, I mean, that's freshman through senior year. So that's over 800 kids, between 800 and 900 kids that you have to get their votes.
All
we
boys,
had a good chat.
Right?
What?
All
what?
Boys?
No. It's co-ed. Oh, okay. And so we had a good talk about this. And he said that he really wanted to run for student council president. And so I decided to run for National Honor Society president and stay on in student council as a rep, which is sort of like when Robert McNamara was convinced to leave Secretary of Defense to become president of the IMF or the World Bank. No, really, it's a great move. And so that's what it. But I only have fun. I love the meetings. I love giving talks.
Could you have been senior class president? Was there a senior class president?
Yeah, you know what? There was, but. I decided at that point I wanted to capture the nerd herd society.
You'd already nailed down your legacy
I was already set. And you know what? The National Honor Society, we had one of our big things. We had a blood drive. One of the other things was a charitable volleyball tournament. And so I was in charge of that and with my team. And it's for the whole school, so like this, you know, the whole team, you know, any class from freshman to senior, you can partake in the volleyball tournament. And there were a group of girls who formed a team, and they said you got to have a name for the team. She goes, oh, we don't care, put something down for us. So I did, and I called, I named them the Beavers, and apparently that was that. Anyway, if that happened today,
what did the nuns say?
They didn't care. The janitor, Andre, laughed. And then the girls booed me, and then they just played anyway. You know? And that's the way it was back then. Lots of laughs. It was the 80s. Much like, you know, movies in the 80s. It was...
Yeah, it's like Revenge of the
Nerds. It was totally like that. It was fine. Yeah, Revenge of the...
Tricking girls and
Revenge of the Nerds where he
fools...
Having
sex with the wrong people.
He fools her in the moon, the bounce house.
That is.
You know, I remember...
That's what it was like, so...
I remember a gym class when I was, junior year where... one of the guys in the gym class snuck up behind a couple girls who were like standing with their hands behind their backs, just like hanging out talking, and just like dropped his junk in her hands.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was just a thing which everybody, both boys and girls, in the entire class thought was the funniest thing which has ever happened in the history of the universe. Yeah. And right. Now would probably get this guy sent to prison.
Prison.
He would be on a
as
sex
you should.
I don't know if he would. I don't know if he would go to prison, but he would be on a sex offender list for the rest of his
but
life.
What's hysterical about this is that this guy and this girl, 20 years later, wound up married. They didn't.
That's a great story.
They didn't date in high school.
Remember
they
the
didn't
time.
Date in college. Yeah. They didn't. They both like went off, had other things. Both moved back to the town they grew up in, and didn't start dating until they were like 30.
But you know what? It was seared into her memory. She couldn't get over that. Yeah, I got to get a piece of that, actually. That's what she was saying. I got to relive that. That is amazing. Did you have... We can't. There was other things. We're just going to move right along, I think. I'm not going to get into it.
You're not going to get
no,
in
you
the
know,
way.
These terrible rumors. Like you know, there would be like girls who would like, oh, that you heard about that girl, you know, so and so and so and so. And it's like, you know, you'll talk, oh, like the hot dog story. Remember that? Every school had one.
Every school has
everyone
a hot dog
had a hot dog story. And I always thought, you know, but this is before the internet, so you don't know that. And you think it's actually, and some poor girl is, you know, somebody, she walks, unbeknownst to her, you know, she walks around like in the cafeteria, oh, there she is. Who, and you're like, who decided on that? You know? Terrible.
Absolutely the people. You know what? Let's be honest. You're the one who decided it because you spread those rumors.
No, the only part that I said is that it was cooked.
You just said, oh, I heard. Maybe it wasn't frozen. Who could say?
It was cooked. At the end, it was cooked. But you know, I never told. This is terrible.
Was Vic a gossip?
I never.
Vic, were you a gossip monger?
I'm not going to.
I find that
hard to
believe.
I'm not going to answer that question.
When did you construct the vault?
At what
age did you finally construct a vault in which you could put secrets? Because I cannot imagine that the vault existed circa 1991.
The vault comes with age.
Yeah,
you gotta build that
it
brick
does.
By cinder
I'd
block
say
brick.
Maybe the early 2000s. And then like mid 2000s was the double vault. Don't forget to tell
Were
me
you,
it's a double vault.
Did you have the vault when you started at the Weekly Standard?
Oh god, no.
Did the vault exist when you were
kind of
and I think
of some horrible ones. I think of some horrible ones that I accidentally spilled the beer. Not sometimes it's not true. It's true. I accidentally said something that turns out not to be true about somebody or people or whatever. But other times it was just indiscretion where somebody told me they got fired from some job and then I mentioned to somebody else, "Oh, did you hear so and so got fired?" And then the girl would be like, "Why did you? I didn't tell anybody yet. I didn't tell it." I'm like, "Oh, sorry," you know, and everybody found that. So I feel horrible about that.
This is you're the person who made it so everybody in our circle, not our circle like at the Weekly Standard, but I mean in the circle of journalism, would have to say this is off the record.
Oh well, we all know how that works.
You'd have to every conversation would be prefaced with this is off the record. But if you don't like people who are listening right now don't understand that this is like an actual thing that happens when more than four journalists get together. In any situation and have a conversation for any length of time, every single thing they say will be prefaced with, well, this is off the record, but, and then it's just like a totally banal story about like the fucking Snickers bars in the freezer of the store. Anyway, I don't know. I was rambling.
JVL has a great story about a very important campaign person whose name will not be mentioned, but who said to her,
I'll say Juliana's name.
Off the record.
This person who would do things like when you called her up for the campaign she was repping at the time, would say something like, I got something for you. And off the record, Mayor Giuliani is the greatest guy I've ever met. You can't use that.
You can't use it.
You can't use that.
You can't even hint at it.
But he is just a dynamite human being, and he's the real deal. So.
thank you so much for the inside scoop.
Get bent. Go back to Eyes Wide Shut.
I always heard that among the Europeans, for example, that they had a discrepancy between the term off the record and on background, and that was a reverse for them. So sometimes when I would interview some of these Germans.
Oh, like public school, private school in the UK?
Yeah, some confusion, yes. And so they would say things like off the record. I'm like, okay, I'm putting this one in. on background in the American sense, I'm thinking, you know, so that's where, anyway.
This has to be how, like, an episode of Yes, Minister takes place, right? Because you get some German reporter who comes in and says, no, auf Deutsch, off the record means.
Right, and then it's like the good stuff. Yeah. Sonny, what is going on with you?
Not a whole lot. I like don't have anything good for this week. My garage door broke again. I moved, you know, we bought this house 2 years ago and like three things now have gone wrong with this garage. It's like every single part of the garage door,
the
is,
opener or the door itself.
Now, so what the first thing that, so this, when we first moved here, or not even really when we first moved here, but like July of 2020, the like the wheel, you know, so you know how the wheels are on the tracks, right? Of the door, it goes up and down. And the wheels are like bolted. There's like a plate that bolts to the actual door, right? Well, one of the wheels had like kind of come sideways off the track and wrenched the panel entirely off the door. So it wrenched that like bolt. So like we had that. So somebody had to come out and fix that, and they replaced all of the like wheels.
We got to do them all at the same time. The,
you know, you got to do them all at the same time. So that was fun. And then literally like a month later, the spring, the big spring.
Those things are expensive.
And those things are not cheap. Those things are not cheap. So that
Those are made of vibranium. And so you've got to go all the way to Wakanda to get them. And so the shipping from Wakanda to Dallas.
I didn't know vibranium could break.
I know. So I replaced that. That was literally, again, that was like a month later that this happened, which was very annoying to me. And it's been fine since then. And it's been fine since August of 2020.
Is your lift now broken?
Until this week. So, no, it's not. I thought it. I was afraid it was the actual motor, like the actual, you know, the motor, the half horsepower thing. But apparently there's like a little plastic connector that connects the motor to the actual chain pull. Yep. And that like shattered. Like, well, I don't know what the fuck happened to that. But it got caught on something or something, and it just exploded into a million pieces. So
you should really replace the whole thing. I mean, I wouldn't just play around with just doing the plastic piece. I'd just throw a new, get a nice LiftMaster Elite Series.
Yeah. Well, I've got the one that's in there is actually a pretty nice one, apparently, because I asked the guy. I was like, so should I get a new one? He's like, yeah, you could in theory replace this. It's kind of old. It's like 10 years old, but. You know, it's a LiftMaster. It should last for another 10 years. Blah, blah. I was like, okay.
Is it Wi-Fi enabled? Because I gotta say,
Do you have a Wi-Fi enabled?
I sure do.
Can you operate it off of your phone?
Oh, I sure do.
I have a question. I have a question for you, JBL. Is everything in your house connected to your Wi-Fi? Do you have the Internet of Things in all of your things?
No. Internet of
What do you have connected
thermostat.
To your phone? What could I, if I stole your phone, what could I operate?
You could operate
from
door lock. Not the locks, but the alarm system, the thermostat, the garage door, the Sonos, the Roku player, the TV. You could turn the TV, any of the TVs anywhere in the house, you could turn on or off.
Oh my goodness.
Using my phone. But like no lights. We don't have any lights. We don't have any Amazon Echoes. We don't have anything that listens to you.
You don't have like your fridge isn't set up to tell
none
you
of that,
you're out
and
of
we
things.
And we don't have any Alexa ketchup. Or Echo Dots or Apple Home Pods or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that we have set up via our phone is the alarm system. Like we can turn the alarm on and off from the phone, but everything else, thermostats, like everything else, I don't want on
the
internet. The
thermostat
at all.
Is so great because when you are away for a week in the summer. And the thermostat is off so that the house is like 85 degrees. Mm-hmm. 4 hours before you're going to come home, you just turn it on. And you know that when you walk into the house, it'll be cool. That's pretty nice.
One thing you could do to avoid that is never go anywhere. You could just stay home.
Not really an option.
Time.
We do like to go down to the beach.
Well, that's it.
Where the sand is.
You know what's at the beach.
And you know what? Sand, the place at the beach, also an internet-enabled thermostat. So when I get to the beach, my house is cool. And then when I leave the beach and come back here, my other house is cool.
Do you ever start messing with people who are staying in the house?
Raising the thermostat.
I don't do
just, like, a Stanford experiment style, just like 1 degree hotter every hour.
No.
Until they snap and murder everyone. No. You don't do that.
Victorina, how are you, buddy? How's your gout?
Well, I guess it's time for a gout update. Well, when I spoke to you last week, it was on the mend. And then like a day or two later, inexplicably, I had a terrible gout relapse.
Hold on.
Yes.
A day or two later, you're supposed to go to the palm.
That's true. But it was uneventful. I had two martinis, but they were gin.
They were gin.
It's clear.
What'd you have to eat? What'd you have?
No oysters. I just got a steak, but it was the lunch portion. The lunch portion, 10 ounces.
Was it a ribeye?
A New York strip. Come on. I'm, you know, nothing too fatty. New York strip, medium rare. and then some potatoes, and then
did you get that half and half?
No, I did have a Caesar salad with anchovies, and then
the half and half, half for and everybody. Half it's not a sex thing. It's half onion rings.
It
half
is delicious. I could throw
chips
that into a sex thing, and then I skipped dessert, but I did have a little bit of an after dinner drink, and so anyway, like I said, amaretto, nothing happened, and so it came back with a vengeance. So finally, on Saturday, I caved and I went to the doctor. And I saw a PA who took one look at it. He had a big smile on his face. He just said, "Wow, that is textbook. Mind if I take a picture?" And I said, "Well, are you going to send it to JAMA?" And he goes, "Yeah, they'd love that." He says, no, I'm just going to put it on your file." And so he just put it on my file. And he said, he gave me a couple of options. And I ended up going on a course of prednisone.
What were your options? What are the options?
There's endomethacin, there's colchicin. I mean, I'm already taking, you know, a leave, but you could take a stronger dosage of naproxen. But it's too late for allopurinol because I'm already having the flare up. Or you could just take two leave, you know, twice a day, or we can speed things up and take the Medrol pack, the prednisone. So that's what I did. I took the prednisone, and I'm on the mend. The swelling is down. I was able to go for a little run a couple days ago, which was nice. You could still see the bump a little bit, but it's not angry and red and swollen. And that's where I am.
People were mad that I.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think it's best for everyone that they. You can't unsee it.
We don't want to scar.
No,
that's
inappropriate. That's
that
for Facebook. That's
isn't there?
Wetter.
Isn't there? In I'm gonna get you, sucker. Isn't there a scene where somebody's got a bunion and they show it to you? And it,
yeah, probably an old lady. Probably an
yes.
Old lady.
No, I think it's an old lady, yeah. And they're talking about the bunion and talking about it and talking about it, and then they show
movie
it to you.
It's such a great. You know, there's little scenes like that. But that's how I feel like an old. I feel like the old lady from No Country for Old Men. Remember her? And she's sitting there talking about the cancer. And she's, I'm on the prednisone. That's how I feel like. I feel like this is my I feel like this is my last stand. I'm not going to do anything else. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Clint Eastwood's Cry Macho came in third place at the box office with $4.4 million, followed by Free Guy with $5.1 million. And again, in first place, Shang-Chi with $21.7 million. Gentlemen, box office thoughts?
Shang-Chi will pass Black Widow at the box office before the start of this weekend. Which is, I think everyone will say is a big win.
More fodder for Scarlett in her lawsuit.
30 or 40 million past Black Widow, I think, is a big win for everybody involved. Free Guy holds strong. I think it dropped 8%.
Yeah, Ryan
last
Reynolds
weekend,
is
so
doing
7.
Well
7.
In this
7%.
Pandemic. He's doing well.
Ryan Reynolds doing well, but it's really is a story of like the big movies and then everything else, and we're getting like one big blockbuster a month. In this case, it's Shang-Chi.
When does Shang-Chi become available at home? Not anytime soon.
I think it's next month. It's like middle of next month, maybe early next month, early October, late mid October, something like that. But like there were two or three new movies that came out this week. There's a new Joe Carnahan movie, Cop Shop, starring Gerard Butler and Frank Grillo, and the great Toby Huss. Love Toby Huss.
Frank Grillo.
But nobody's going to see that. It grossed like $2.5 million on 3,000 screens. It's on 3,000 screens, $2.5 million, something like that. Which is too bad because I actually went to go see it in the theater. It was entertaining enough. It's a sort of movie that like you could see Gerard Butler like muscling to like 40 or 50 million in normal times. These are still not normal times. Box office was interesting. Cry Macho is once again it's another one of these HBO Max theatrical simultaneous releases alongside Reminiscence and some of the others that just like. Nobody's going to see him in theaters because why would you do that when you can just sit at home watch it on HBO
How much
Max?
Better do you think it would have done if it were strictly in theaters, Cry Macho?
in a normal mm-hmm. time, 10 to 15 million probably. And then it would have held well because Clint Eastwood's audience is old. Like this is so. This is one reason why it actually probably doesn't hurt it that much being on HBO Max is because. It doesn't hurt it that much being on HBO Max in the pandemic, because in the pandemic, old people are still not going back to theaters. Mm. The old folks are still very hesitant to go sit down in theaters. They're doing everything.
But Sonny, it does also matter what kind of movie it is, right? I mean, Godzilla versus King Kong, which was simultaneous on HBO Max, mm-hmm. did okay. In theaters, right? I mean, HBO, I would say Warner's has not been releasing a whole bunch of movies that really demand to be seen on the big screen.
Mortal Kombat would have been better if it had been released on the big screen. I mean, you could make the case that a lot of the movies that they've been releasing are not the sort of things that would, you know, blow up the box office anyway. But Cry Macho would do better than $5 million in a non-pandemic mm-hmm. you know, theatrical opening. And even Godzilla versus King Kong, I mean, that movie, you know, I still think it hasn't quite hit $100 million domestic.
Yeah, it would have done better. Clearly would have done better.
Which is soft. That's very soft.
Especially since it's a baller movie.
That's fine. This is what it is. But yeah, like but this is just another one of the kind of smaller movies that makes as much sense at home as it does in theaters. I mean, I like the first real big test of this is going to be Dune in middle October. We've talked about this before, and if that grosses more than $35 million on its opening weekend, people in Warner Brothers office, Discovery Warner, HBO, Time Warner Cable, whatever the fuck it's called now. They're going to be like doing cartwheels.
Right. Pop the cork.
So I mean, it sucks for the folks who are counting on those movies to gross really high to, you know, guarantee more such movies. But HBO said, Warner Brothers said we're gonna take into account the numbers on HBO Max, and if it performs like a blockbuster on HBO Max, we're gonna make number two. I just like, you know, I can't
mentally
see them
convince themselves. Sure,
spending $200 million,
yeah,
on a movie that grosses $150 million.
I was
going to
ask, what is the
because it did
what is
HBO.
The budget for Dune reboot?
Just like $200 million. Yeah. It's not a reboot. It's a new adaptation of the source material. You know, it's based on a book.
Oh, I don't know about that. Who
did
would
you
write
know that? It's based
that
on a book.
If that were a book, that
it's written
that
in the
1950s,
I think.
Book. That would be a long book. That'd be like 200 pages.
I've been reading the Foundation books again, because that Foundation series on Apple is coming up. Have you guys seen the trailers for that? Here's what I don't under. Maybe I'll save this for. I'll save this for outtakes. We'll talk about Foundation.
All right. All right. And we are talking about Clint Eastwood starring and directed Cry Macho this week.
Who saw it? Who saw it?
Oh, I saw it too.
I saw it. Did anybody else see it?
No,
I didn't.
Oh, come on.
I forgot.
There's a cock called Macho.
Cry Macho follows an old cowboy named Mike, who goes to Mexico with a fistful of dollars to find his buddy's son, Rafa. When Mike gets down to Mexico, he visits the boy's sexy mother, who wants Mike to take her any which way but loose. She wants to get in the line of his fire. But Mike is all business. He would rather go to a cockfight looking for a teenage boy. At the fight, Mike meets Rafa and his giant cock, which he calls Macho. Man, what a name! Mike, Rafa, and Macho take a road trip, and there's a lot of tension. At first, Mike doesn't like the boy's cock, but it turns out to be an acquired taste. By the end of the story, Mike loves it and wishes it would paint his wagon. After Mike's truck is stolen, he goes looking for transportation and really wishes he had a pink Cadillac, but instead he teaches Rafa to be a pale rider of horses. As Mike, Clint Eastwood gives a performance of magnum force and really lays down the gauntlet for Oscar season. Cry Macho is the best movie I've ever seen about a man, a teenage boy, and the boy's impressive cock. I give it 10 stars.
That was...
For the record, the cock is that a rooster. It's a rooster,
that was,
Gene.
That was very well written. That wasn't quite Gene's voice. He's not.
I've seen a lot of movies with this general premise before. This one was the best.
This is the same. This is actually the voice of Send, Harry Send. It's that. It's the old man. And, you know, Gene was much more distinguished than that. Come on. But a lot of references there. A lot of references. Lovely. Okay, Sonny, please, save us.
Cry Macho is a movie about a boy and his cock. The premise of this movie is Clint Eastwood plays a broken-down old cowboy named Mike Milo who has to go down to Mexico to rescue the son of his former boss. The boss has fired Mike Milo for being lazy and showing up to work late and all sorts of stuff. But he still feels indebted to the boss because the boss pulled him out of a spiral. He's gonna go down and get his son. And when he gets there, he is confronted by a sexy Mexican senora who really wants him to, you know, spend the night. And Clint Eastwood says, no, I've got a job to do. I got to find this boy. I've got to find this boy and save him and take him back to his dad. Long story short, finds boy, hijinks on the road. They get stranded in a Mexican town. And that's where they spend basically the last 45 minutes of this movie.
The last three hours of this movie in the town.
Yeah. The last 45 minutes or so of this 105-minute movie in this town, and that's when things just stop happening. It's the rhythms of small town life in a small town, and they learn to appreciate the little things like pressing your own corn tortillas.
I love that. It's delicious.
Extended sequence about here's the thing about this movie, is that first off, this was a long sought after project.
Yeah. It's been around for 20 years.
People have been trying to get this off the ground for like 30 years. Clint Eastwood was originally circling this project before he made Unforgiven and was like, at 68 or whatever, I'm too young to make this movie. But now, at 90...
Isn't like Roy Scheider and Schwarzenegger were both attached at various points to this too?
Roy Scheider?
Schwarzenegger? Yeah.
Wow.
Schwarzenegger was attached in 2011 after his stint as governor.
Oh.
And it would have made more sense for him as, again, like a 64-year-old man, 65-year-old, whatever.
Kid, come with me if you want to live.
Would have made more sense. But like this movie has a huge fundamental problem, and that is that Clint Eastwood is too old for this role. I'm sorry. When he throws a punch, he looks like an old man throwing a punch. When he is just walking around, he looks like he's barely able to get around. He's 91 years old. The man's a legend. Good for him. I'm glad he can direct a movie like this. And the movie looks great. I want to say it's a great kind of standard Western, taking advantage of the American
and
Southwest.
No CGI.
Lots of big vistas, lots of sunsets, lots of silhouettes. The director, whose name is Ben Davis, I think.
I thought Clint Eastwood directed it.
No, the director of photography, the cinematographer, does a really good job of, like, again, using sunsets and silhouettes to kind of put Clint Eastwood, the legend, up against the sky. He's like, you know, it's man melding into the myth from whence he came, whatever. I like the look of this movie, and I don't mind the slowness. It is slow. It is very slow. But I could never buy it. I'm sorry. I cannot buy 90-year-old Clint Eastwood being an object of sexual desire for this, like, 38-year-old, you know, rich Mexican lady.
The actress
like,
is 35, I, like, and she's I, astonishingly good-looking.
Yeah, like it's. She's 39 now. She was 38 when they were shooting. So like she's very attractive woman. Like 50 some years younger than Clint Eastwood. There are actors who could have done this role. Liam Neeson could have done this role, or Mel Gibson could have done this role. Or like Sylvester Stallone even could have done this role. Clint Eastwood, legend, love him. Nothing but respect for my Clint Eastwood, but he cannot.
Use like a CGI like they did for Robert De Niro in The Irishman? Because you know,
remember the scene in The Irishman where he's like curb stomping right. that guy, and he
and the body.
And it's clearly
the
like
the body moves.
It's like an 80-year-old man moving his legs on like a 40-year-old man's yeah. body, and it's just like no, that looks bad and fake. That's what this whole movie reminded me of. I mean, there's just one last specific complaint. There's a shot in this movie where Clint Eastwood is breaking a Bronco. Right? He's busting a Bronco.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Busting a Bronco, and in the scene with Eastwood on the horse starts in like a very close tight close up, right? And it's like just his face, and he's like kind of moving up and down, and it's clear he's like sitting in a chair.
Oh, come on,
back and forth.
No.
He's sitting on a plank of wood, and somebody's going like this. And you can't see me on the listeners can't see me, but I'm moving my arms
like
up and
a teeter totter.
I refuse to believe like that. Like a teeter totter. I refuse to believe that.
And then we get a wider establishing shot sort of thing, and it's clearly a stuntman in Clint Eastwood's jacket. Just like riding this horse,
unclear.
And then we cut back in on that tight close up. There's Clint rocking back and forth on his plank of wood, and I was just like, "This is fucking ridiculous. I cannot abide this. I can't. This makes me angry."
Question.
So anyway.
Question.
Anyway. Yeah.
Of all of the things which were utterly improbable. Was the craziest one the MILF who wanted to bang it out with him, the punching the bodyguard, or Clint catching a rooster who is running around?
That's the first thing that jumped out to me in this movie. No. After the hot 38-year-old throws herself at him, he goes to this cockfight, and the rooster's running around. Macho, the rooster's running around. And all of a sudden, he turns into Rocky, not in Rocky 1, but in Rocky 3, when he's been running on the beach. He's got the speed. He's got the speed
not
and the
just
stamina.
Speed and stamina but can bend over and down to the ground to grab the bird.
It was ridiculous. I couldn't catch that rooster. There's no way that
answer,
old man
The
could.
Answer to your question, JVL, is neither. Neither of those scenarios were ridiculous because, number one, that lady was crazy. She wanted to do it with anybody. Number two, the punching of the bodyguard. Mm-hmm. He got the help of Macho. Macho was distracting him, and so it allowed him to land a little nick in the nose.
A little jab.
He's got the jab. Okay, a bony jab.
That guy is the worst bodyguard ever.
Really bad. And then the third one was the chicken. Remember, he's like a horse whisperer, but also an animal guy. And so he knew you don't have to. The more you chase after the chicken, the faster the chicken's going to go. You go slow, the chicken goes slow. Whoop! Picked him up. That's how he did it. I like this movie.
Are you kidding me?
No, not at all. And I'm obviously like infinitely better than Widows, but let's go through the quadrants here. Okay, so plot, I gave it an A. It would have been an A+, but I was concerned. How is he going to do this border thing? Like, you know, like you need papers. Don't you need papers? Don't you need passports? I wasn't
right
sure.
Just send okay. right. There was no what?
They should have had a thing. That, you know, would have been great if he was at the border and then they would have... Anton Chigurh pass him by, just like, oh, sorry.
For the first 45 minutes, I was desperate for Anton Chigurh to show up in this movie and start killing people.
He was, okay.
I literally have that in my notes. Duration. Like, where is Anton Chigurh? We need him.
It's terrifying. Duration, I gave it an A+. It's an hour 40, and it didn't feel long to me. I was in a mood where I was very mellow. And no, I was not smoking anything. I was just very mellow. Okay. Action and violence, I give it a C.
Does your prednisone, is that a side effect of the
prednisone? I'm not so sure. The C for the action violence, I mean, but I'm happy there was no CGI. That's what I liked about it. That's what I liked about it.
That action and violence gets a C.
That gets a C, yeah.
These quadrants are a sham.
And they're my quadrants.
The quadrants are the biggest scam. I'm going to keep going.
And it will always be with us. The sex nudity is an NA because it's PG-13. Also,
it's not an NA.
It's PG-13.
She's in lingerie. She's begging for sex. And she doesn't get naked.
Because it's Victorino Mattis,
I know, would be outraged by that.
It is, but it's PG-13, so they're not going to do that. If it was R, then I would be upset.
Did you guys see the Mule?
No, but I want to because somebody said it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
So the Mule is an interesting movie because Clint Eastwood is again playing an old person who goes south of the border, and the whole point of the character, his oldness, his elderly status makes sense because he's like not supposed. Nobody would ever
right.
Suspect
it's perfect.
This guy being of being mule. A drug runner, like he puts the drugs under in the trunk and he goes, and like nobody would ever stop him and search his car because why would you look in this old man's car? In that movie, 88-year-old Clint Eastwood has not one, but two threesomes.
That's what I heard. That's right. Because I hadn't seen
threesomes.
It and I heard it wasn't that good. And Aaron Harrison's like, no, you got to see it. It's really good. He said to me. So I guess that there you go.
So that movie gets an A.
Okay, good. Well, there you go. But it's probably rated R. I thought this was sweet. I know I have a soft spot for Clint Eastwood. At the end of
the kid in this movie,
I liked
terrible.
It a lot. And the end of the movie, I said, "Oh, that was really nice." And you know, Kate said to me, "Kate, she was watching with me. She said that's a movie for old people." I said, "Not true. I like it." JVL, your thoughts?
The kid. Here's a question for you guys. The kid is supposed to be 13 or 16.
13.
Unclear. Supposedly. I think he's supposed to be 14 or 15.
The kid is written by somebody who spends no time around teenage boys because the kid's sort of mental and emotional makeup is that of about a 10-year-old. Like that character makes total sense as a 10-year-old boy.
Yes.
Not as a 13 or 14-year-old boy. He does not seem. We are told that this kid has been living on the streets, stealing stuff,
and abused.
And abused. And this kid does not seem super street smart and together. Does not seem like he's
good about getting cars. He can jack a car. I would say the acting.
They tell us a lot of things, but they don't really show
us. The kid
us.
Acting is not as bad as the Hmong acting in Gran Torino. I'll put it that way. That was
I thought the Hmong acting
was terrible
in Gran Torino.
Oh, did you really think so? Oh man, I just recently watched Gran Torino again, and man, there's some awkward moments. But anyway, continue, JVL. Sorry.
I mean, so one of the things that jumped out at me for the first half of the movie was how little connective tissue there was between scenes. It was very episodic. He shows up in Mexico, and the next thing you know, he's at the MILF's house, and then he's just at the cockfight, and then you just move with no, and that bugged me at the beginning of the movie, but then I kind of liked it. I liked the pacing of that a little bit, except that tempo then disappears halfway through the movie once they get to this town, there was this amazing scene, though, where a guy gets shocked after the big cock just springs out into his face. Do you know that part at the end? The guy who just... No? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The bodyguard.
No,
he's no chicken. He's macho.
The rooster in this is very much like a cartoon sidekick. Rooster, like
this
Pixar.
Rooster is like a lot Moana. Like the Moana thing, and also what's up with the Federales, like the Mexican police?
Terrifying.
Are the most crack we are, as far as I can tell, in a desolate part of the country with only four working automobiles, and the Federales, despite the fact that they are engaged in a war against the cartels, managed to track.
They're good.
These guys they're across good. The entire countryside, they're always there. They are on top of it because unclear.
They're like the death squads.
Because are they tracking because they've followed him from the cockfighting? Because they broke up this cockfighting ring? And none of it makes sense.
They're in the pay of the
No, I don't think they are. That's why she sends the bodyguard after. Again, there's not enough connective tissue to know.
They're sort of connected, I think,
so
to them.
Here's the thing that I want to get to, though, that's about this. So I agree, Santino, entirely with how ridiculous Eastwood is in this. And yet, I think we're probably wrong to complain about Eastwood's role and his performance in this. Because without Eastwood, there is no reason for this movie to get made. This movie with Liam Neeson or Sylvester Stallone in it is worth nothing. And yet, there are moments in it where Eastwood does the sort of magic stuff. You know, like where the performers, when they're in the car with the rooster, there's a lot of Every Which Way But Loose in it. Mm-hmm. You know, where he played with the orangutan. He'll throw a line away or he'll catch this wry smile and it will work. And the whole thing made me think of the 2012 Republican National Convention.
Oh, the chair.
Do you guys remember that?
Sure, of course.
Sure.
So I was in the room for the convention. I was there in the arena watching the thing happen. And there was this disconnect between people who watched it on TV, who thought that it was the craziest, creepiest thing ever, and the energy in the room. And the energy there, like, it was weird and it didn't all work, but some of it really worked. Like, there were moments of it that were genuinely great and charming. And there are moments of this, not a lot of them, not even most of them, but there are a few of them which are genuinely charming. And if this is the last time we get to see Clint Eastwood on screen, then I would rather have this movie made with him in it than not have it made.
There you go.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, to complain that it's imperfect seems ungrateful for the career that this guy has had.
Like I said, B plus.
But it's not that it's imperfect. It's that it is. It doesn't work. It just doesn't. It's implausible to the extent that I cannot watch this and think this is a thing that is happening that I believe.
I agree with that.
I can't. I agree. And like again, you guys should actually watch The Mule.
I will.
I think you would find it interesting.
I bet it does well
on,
in the quadrants.
You know, HBO Max or whatever, because it's the same basic sort of movie about a guy who is
make
trying to connect with, you know, blah blah. He's trying. It's a reconsideration of masculinity. Blah, blah. It's the same sort of thing he's been doing
time.
Since Unforgiven, right?
I had a bad past,
and it's just better on every level. I mean, the Mule has Bradley Cooper as the like second
lead
Pena. In it, and Bradley Cooper is I don't know how to tell you this. Bradley Cooper is a much better actor than
the
15-year-old who is in this movie. He just is, and like that would have worked better as a swan song than this, which again is I find implausible and unbelievable on virtually every level. And I agree with you, JBL, that there are nice moments. There are nice like Clint Eastwood star turn moments in this. I wouldn't dispute that. He can't carry the
film.
Does
he think
totally agree?
Does he think he carries the film because in his mind he's not 91, but he's still not Outlaw Josie Wales young, but like Unforgiven young?
He wants to act, right? I mean, he still wants to act, and
he
does not want to retire from in front of the camera the way other older stars do, or he does not want to retire into roles that are more fitting in the way that. Like, Michael Gambon doesn't do stuff where he breaks a Bronco.
Right.
You know, Christopher Plummer was not doing, you know what I mean? Like, Michael Caine, look at Michael Caine, right? Michael Caine, you know, in Interstellar is, like, seated at a table. No, not Interstellar. Mm-hmm. What's the...
The last
intent,
one?
Tenet. Right, yeah. Just seated at a table because, like, that's what he could do. Yeah. And he can still be Michael Caine for that, but he can't do other stuff. Did you guys notice the weird directorial choice about subtitles where sometimes yes, you get some of the subtitles Spanish. In Spanish, but then yes. sometimes you don't. Yes. I found that very confusing.
I couldn't understand why.
I couldn't understand the choice of it.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to figure it out, and it didn't. I just couldn't come up with a reason.
Well, you know, I like to have subtitles for Spanish and English. But but it was
Sonny. Did that pop for you and think to yourself, why is this happening?
Yeah,
no, and it usually does when I'm watching something and some things are subtitled and some mm-hmm. things aren't. I usually make note of it, and I didn't hear, which suggests to me that it worked.
It made me wonder what they were hiding from us, or you know, like because then you just have to get the gist of oh, they're in trouble or something like that. But it only
bothered me because I was trying to figure out. The reasoning for the choice, not for any other reason.
Question, where does her money come from?
Probably the investments.
Because I assumed immediately that there was some drug connection wrongly, and then you just don't find out. And I kept on thinking, who is the husband who's going to find out about what's going on? Of course, the husband is technically Dwight Yoakam, but so she's kind of with the bodyguard, I guess. But, you know, because if I were in Clint's position... Yes, exciting, but on the other hand, kind of scary. Who are these guys roaming around? They're going to come in the middle? You know, I mean, it was very scary, but, you know.
Dwight Yoakam is great in this movie for a role that makes no sense.
No sense whatsoever.
At all. The role he's playing of the father who sends Clint Eastwood down there to, like, just his motivations keep changing willy-nilly, and, like, it's hard to tell what he actually wants. From like this boy, if it's actually just a money player, if he is actually like he wants to be a father to him or what? Like I don't think the movie knows
what the answer is to that.
I don't think
the,
no. I don't
the
think
reason they, why this know. Movie takes place in 1980 is because that's when the book was written, or that it's just been sitting there for so long.
The book was written in 74, 75. Right,
so they
like
just
that,
chose to keep it of that period. Yeah.
Originally, it was a script. He wrote a script. The original writer wrote a script. It got rejected by everybody in town, so he wrote a novel that did well, that sold some copies, and then he just resubmitted the same exact script to the studios, and somebody bought it. And it's been kind of making the rounds in Hollywood for the last 30, 40 years. Like it finally, you know, a spot opened up on Clint Eastwood's schedule, and he was like, now's the time. Not when I was 65. I was way too young for it then. Now that I'm 90,
one of the things you notice is how much meat he's lost, you know, in that time span from, let's say, Gran Torino to, from that time until now, even when he, even in his 80s. And now when you enter his 90s, I mean, he's just a stick figure now, sadly. And one of the things you do notice is the voice is also very, it's reedy, you know, it's old. It's very old.
Yeah.
But still, I thought if this movie takes place in 1980, that means... his character was born in 1889. So
wow.
I mean, that's kind of crazy. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, they never say the age.
No, they
of
don't.
Character.
I'm just basing it on how. So
be,
you're saying that. You,
doesn't
they,
have to be 90.
Are you saying that in the movie he's not supposed to be 91?
He looks every year.
He does.
Doesn't look like a spry.
Clint was born
80.
In the Hoover administration. So anyway, okay.
I feel bad.
I know,
saying
you
this,
love Clint. I know you
love Clint
Eastwood,
but like I just,
and despite
old,
all
man.
That, I still thought it was very sweet.
Old.
I liked it.
It has its moments.
Do we have any other thoughts?
No.
Does he have another project lined up? If you go to IMDb, you know, usually they have stuff.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Victorina, you didn't get to make a cock joke. Sonny and I both had our fun, and you're just going to let this is like Chekhov's gun. You're just going to let it sit there?
No, it did not occur to me. Not at all, except for cockfights or something. It's funny. It's Mexico. It's also very popular in the Philippines. It's that Spanish influence. But no, that's funny. Okay.
Who are you?
I know.
Naked Elizabeth Debicki does nothing for you.
Too tall.
But
scary.
this, you're like, oh, it's the best. I love it. Good. You don't want to make the puns. You don't like what? No. This prednisone is bad shit. You got to get off of it.
I'm so hungry, too. I'm so hungry. The prednisone makes me so hungry.
I don't like the way this drug makes you.
I learned it from you, Dad.
I want you back, Vic. I want the Victorino that I fell in love with back.
And I haven't had a drink since. in like 6 days. So Spirit of the Week, corrections, shout outs, anything? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. What did you want to save till the sun?
Oh, so I, as I said, I've been reading the Foundation books because this this series is coming to Apple TV Plus. Did you have you've seen the trailers?
I have. I don't even know what you're talking about. You, is this Ayn Rand?
It's on
Ayn Rand.
It's on Apple TV Plus. It's Isaac Asimov's Foundation books. It was originally a series of short stories. It got turned into a trilogy, then expanded into, you know, like seven more books or whatever. But I've been reading. The fundamental premise of the books is this scientist predicts the fall of the Galactic Empire. You know, a million star systems, and it's all going to collapse, and there will be 30,000 years of darkness unless the Foundation is established and can kind of guide humanity through this crisis, and then the Age of Darkness will only be 1,000 years. Okay. The thing about the books is that they take the books are just a series of conversations, more or less. It's just a bunch of people talking to each other over and over again. Just people talking about, they're like, oh, well, this is the crisis and we have to avert it. Well, how are we going to avert it? Well, why don't we do this thing? And then it turns out they do a secret other thing and whatever. But the series is all action. Every single thing that they've shown in the ads, and it's all like backstory on the Empire, which is not in any of the, or at least not in like the first three books. I am like fairly skeptical now, having again revisited these books for the first time in like 30 years, rereading them and thinking like the show that David Goyer is the guy who is behind this. You folks will remember him as the co-writer of The Dark Knight, and some other stuff. Batman vs. Superman, I think he co-wrote. I am somewhat skeptical that this is a thing that will work in any sort of way like the book works. I don't quite understand the point.
Well, the book is like political philosophy, if I'm remembering correctly. I read this, I want to say, my freshman year of high school, and I loved it. Yeah. Spoiler, Vic, this is not for you.
I was going to say, you will please, not, for the love of God, don't make me read or watch this thing. It sounds terrible.
There's a lot of talking. No, but you might like the show because it looks action. Like the show is just nothing but like explosions.
But the book was, this was like Irving Kristol style science fiction. Like Irving Kristol has this great essay about how all science fiction is about politics and it's all political science and all the, it's really true. Of all of that 50s and 60s stuff, and is definitely true of the Foundation books. Sonny, how old were you when you read it the first time?
I mean, I was like 8 when I read it. None of it made any sense to me.
You were
like
a precocious little fellow.
I was way too
you?
Young.
8 years old?
Well, I tried to read it, and I just didn't get it. So I just kind of like worked my way through it, and I was like, okay, these are dumb and boring. Where are my books about sports?
Well, I'm,
but I put it aside. I didn't pick it up again until like a month ago, and I started reading through them again. They're good. They're good. They're entertaining. But like, this is not at all what the TV show looks like.
I am skeptical that Amazon is capable as a
Apple.
Oh, it's Apple. Okay. Well, never mind then. I was thinking this was an Amazon show, not an Apple show. Maybe it's good. If it's an Apple show.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, we can end it there, or I have
Victorino.
You know how I am about.
You will just blame it on the prednisone. We'll just say, it was the vitamin P talking. He's not responsible for that.
That's right. You know how I am about saving food, and so we went out to a restaurant, one of my favorite places, Lebanese Taverna, and my daughter
Courthouse.
Ordered,
right.
No. It's in Westover. It's the original Lebanese Taverna, which is up here. So, my daughter ordered a shawarma sandwich, but she couldn't finish it. So I'm like, oh, save that sandwich. I put it in a box and said, I'll have that for lunch the next day, the shawarma sandwich. And I took some various vegetables and things from other people's plates, loaded up the styrofoam container. But I was driving Kate's car. And then Kate and I think the kids, they wanted to get ice cream or whatever. But I decided not to. And so I said, I'll just drive back. So I drive back. And then they showed up later. And then the next morning, I look in the fridge and I said, where did you put the leftover shawarma? She goes, I didn't put it anywhere. We walked back. And I said, oh, I guess I left it in the car. So I go in the car and there it is. And Kate was not happy. And I bring it in. Even I can't eat it now. You know, it was hot in the car. And she said, she goes, so what? The car smells now? And I said, no. It's fine. It smelled like Beirut. But no, I said, it's fine.
I hope you put it in the compost bin.
Yeah, I'm sure it's fine.